This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents From Rags by Suzanne Wright. Narrated by Emma Wilder. Prologue. Jackson, age 14.
But, stop sniffling, Jackson, snapped Leah as she zipped up her tatty old duffel bag. You should be happy for me. I'm finally getting out of here. I'm going to have my own place.
Jackson Carter, who was curled up on her bed, watched as her older sister stretched her long, lean body, looking much like a contented cat.
But, oi, what did I just say? Stop with the sniffling.
Jackson took a deep breath and wiped her tear-stained cheeks with her sleeve, but she could feel more tears brewing.
Will you come see me sometimes? How can you even ask that? You know I'll be busy going for auditions and stuff.
A self-satisfied smile surfaced on her face.
Hey, just think, you might see me on TV soon, singing and doing concerts.
As usual, Leah's squinty hazel eyes, so different from Jackson's own huge brown ones, shone with confidence. That was one thing that Leah had in abundance, though sometimes Jackson thought it bordered on vanity.
Won't that make all the foster plonkers sorry for passing us off from house to house?
But you'll stay in touch, yeah?
Jackson could hear the uncertainty in her own voice and didn't like this feeling she suddenly had that she was losing her sister for good. Maybe it wouldn't have been so bad if Leah would just tell her the address of her flat. But she was refusing to tell her, and had even asked their social worker and foster parents not to reveal it to Jackson. Leah could be strange like that sometimes. If she thought you desperately wanted something from her, she would refuse to give it to you purely for that reason. Leah shrugged.
What are you panicking for? In 2 years, you'll be out of here yourself.
That was true enough. But 2 years would feel like a long time to someone who was all alone. Once Leah, all she had left in the world, was gone, that was exactly what Jackson would be. Alone. During the past 6 years, Jackson had watched the only people she came to care about disappear from her life. First went Mum, suicide by heroin overdose. Jackson, the one who had found her mother's lifeless body on the sofa, had been 8, Leah 10. There was no dad or other family to care whether they lived or died, so into the social system they went. It wasn't until 18 months ago, after pit-stopping in a series of foster homes all over London, that they had come to live with the Glennon family. They weren't all that bad. Compared to some of the other foster parents, these people were eligible for sainthood. Although they were, in a word, slobs, and not all that interested in what their foster children did, they didn't hit, they didn't grope, and they didn't decide to suddenly starve you for a short while for their own entertainment like the last lot had. Where the Glennons were concerned, as long as you didn't raid Gloria Glennon's stash of chocolate or help yourself to one of Eric Glennon's beloved beers, they'd practice the principle of live and let live. Still, Jackson knew that Leah would have, as she always did wherever they were, played up and set out to annoy them if it hadn't been for the other foster kids. The gorgeous Connor McKenzie and the geeky Roland Thompson had made the situation bearable. Both Jackson and Leah had had a little thing for Connor. In fact, Jackson had become infatuated with him and his cocky grin as only a teenage girl could. Not just because of how gorgeous he was, but because Jackson soon found that underneath his temper and broodiness was intelligence and even kindness. He had always looked out for Jackson, always protected her, always chased off any boy within a 1 mile radius of her. Everyone had feared him, probably because he somehow had the look of a predator. But Jackson had never felt threatened by him. In fact, strangely enough, this menacing person had been the only one to ever make her feel safe, even when he was zooming her around town at top speed in a car he had borrowed for the night. Although that was something he had done regularly, he had never been prosecuted, as he had never been caught. Then, 6 months ago, shortly after Connor had turned 16, he had moved into a flat of his own, just like Leah was doing now. Jackson vividly remembered when he had kissed her the night before he left, something which had shocked the hell out of her. He had promised that he would visit sometimes and even take her to see his flat when it was fixed up, but so far he hadn't been in touch. Then, 3 months after he had left, Roland's mother had finally sorted out her situation and taken her son back to live with her. And now Jackson's very own sister was leaving, too. Sure, she'd have the newest foster addition, Rona, but the girl was far from friendly and kept everyone at a distance.
If you do get famous and stuff, how will I get in touch with you when I get out?
Leah shrugged carelessly.
Maybe I'll phone you on your 16th birthday. Maybe I'll even come get you in a limo. Can you imagine the look on everyone's faces if I turned up here in a limo?
Another squeal. Her 16th birthday. It seemed so far away right now. Without thinking about it, Jackson reached under her mattress and pulled out the photograph that Gloria had let her have. Jackson stood smiling in front of the wonky Christmas tree with Roland on her right side looking absolutely bored, and with Connor on her left. Connor was wearing that cocky grin she loved, with his arm flung over her shoulder. Leah was in the background, combing her long blonde hair, glaring hard at them. She almost looked angry. This was all Jackson had left of them.
When are you going to stop pining for him? Groaned Leah. He isn't coming back. Why would he? What's he got to come back for?
A pang struck Jackson's chest at Leah's words and that condescending glare she had that could decrease a person's self-worth by 90%, just like that.
Don't worry, continued Leah. I'll tell him you said hi.
It took a few seconds for those last words to register.
What do you mean?
She gave Jackson a sympathetic smile, but didn't even try to conceal the insincerity of it.
Come on, Jackson. You didn't honestly think he had any real interest in you, did you? Oh my God, you did. How cute. Or stupid, whichever.
Jackson felt as though she'd been slapped.
He told me he only thought of you as a little sister, that it was me he loved. We did it lots of times, you know. He made me promise to come find him when I got out.
She sighed wistfully.
Soon he and I will be living in L.A., our faces all over the magazines. I'll be recording album after album. Maybe we'll even get married. Leah McKenzie. I like the sound of it. It's a lot better than Leah Carter anyway.
In that one moment, Jackson almost hated her. Her and him. The tears gathering in her eyes were ones of anger and despair now, no longer the fear of being alone. Why would he have kissed her that night before leaving and then told her he'd always cared for her if it was Leah he loved? Leah, who he had been sleeping with all this time.
"He kissed me," she blurted out.
"Well, of course he did. He felt sorry for you. You were getting all teary-eyed. I was the one who told him to kiss you. He hadn't wanted to, but I thought it might stop you from sniveling. Something you're doing again now."
Jackson squeezed her eyes shut against the pictures her mind was tormenting her with of Leah and Connor together, kissing, touching, sleeping together, and them laughing at poor little infatuated Jackson.
"Well, that's me all packed,"
she squealed again with excitement, after casting one last look at the plain, musty-smelling, mostly bare room. Leah threw her bag over her shoulder.
"Gotta go."
Jackson tried to get up from the bed. Maybe to hug her sister, maybe to slap her, or maybe to follow her downstairs and wave at the front door. But it was as though her body was depleted, as though her body was downright sick of her mind ignoring Leah's hurtful behavior, so had decided to intervene before she ran after Leah like a little lost puppy. She did feel lost, though. Jackson was a person who always looked on the bright side. But right now, there didn't seem to be one, and Jackson didn't know how to function without it. So she sat there immobile, as Leah's singing gradually faded until she could hear her no more. In that moment, Jackson felt something change within herself. It was the same sensation she'd gotten when her mother died, and then again when Connor left. Like a piece of herself went with them, leaving gaping holes that Jackson suspected might be permanent. But wasn't that her own fault for getting too close to people? Wasn't it her own fault that she was in such pain right now? It was stupid to have ever thought that Connor would want her and not Leah. Her sister was undeniably beautiful with her straight, sleek, caramel blonde hair, piercing hazel eyes, and tall, thin, lithe body. She would have the angelic look down to a T if it wasn't for the fact that her smile always had a glint of deviousness to it. The two sisters were practically polar opposites in appearance. Jackson sported a head of brown, untamable ringlets and a curvy body that she despised because of the attention it gained her. She was, to her utter annoyance, an early bloomer. Her generous-sized breasts and heart-shaped butt, as the boys in school often described it, were constantly groped, even by total strangers. It hadn't been so bad when Connor was around. Boys had tended to leave her alone for fear of what he would do. Things had changed drastically since he left. And now that she was without her older sister, things could only worsen. Footsteps outside her bedroom door stole her from her thoughts. The door swung lazily open as her relatively new foster sister, Rona, strode into the room chewing gum and plonked herself on the bed beside Jackson. The smell of smoke clung to her dark skin and clothes. Jackson wasn't expecting any comfort from this antisocial girl who seemed to hate everyone. She didn't get it.
"So, big tits, how long do you think it'll be before Queen Bitch realizes she lives in a fantasy land? Singer, my ass."
Jackson said nothing, just continued to stare at the photograph in her hand, wondering whether to kiss it or tear it up.
"You know she won't come back, don't you?"
"She won't."
"They never do,"
grumbled Rona. She wasn't feeling sorry for herself, simply stating what she believed was a fact.
"She's my sister."
"She's also a self-absorbed, spiteful bitch who..."
But nothing, Jackson," she said firmly. "Just because she's blood doesn't mean anything. I'll bet that girl has never done a single thing for you in her life. She looks out for number one, and number one only. Just like the rest of them. So wise up, big tits, and do it now. You're on your own."
Just before leaving the room, she turned back to Jackson.
"Want to know what the trick is to getting through this shit? Never let anyone in."
Alone again, Jackson stared down at the photograph as she considered Rona's departing words. The thing that had kept Jackson from losing herself so far and avoiding the bitterness that consumed Leah was that she rolled with the punches, just accepted that suffering was a part of life. The whole woe-is-me thing wasn't for her. After all, what was so special about her that meant she could flit through life without pain while others were swamped by it? So, she reasoned, her being alone while Leah and Connor began a life together was just something else that she'd have to accept, even though it cut deeper than anything else ever had. Finally, with a deep, cleansing breath, Jackson tore the photograph to pieces and slung them out of the partially open window. She wouldn't let this be an ending. She would try to, instead, make it a new start. She'd do as Rona said, wise up and face that she was alone, but she wouldn't cut herself off like Rona had. Little did Jackson know, but as from the following day, her new start would be tainted. Tainted by violence, struggle, and even more pain. With all that would come her decision to never let anyone in again. Chapter 1. 8 years later. It was amazing how alcohol had the power to make people think they were attractive, mused Jackson. Or in this case, some sort of gift to women. Thank God there was the bar to separate her from this bald, heavyset bloke who was so drunk that both his eyes were fighting for one corner. For the past half hour, while he swayed and slurred, he had been flirting shamelessly with her. His come-hither smile revealed a set of Nicorette-stained teeth. Oh, wait, it wasn't actually a full set. And flirting wasn't quite accurate. Not unless you considered dirty talk, sexual innuendos, and being given flashes of body parts to be flirtatious behavior. More like sick-minded crap. Needless to say, she wasn't inspired to welcome him into her arms and body. Unfortunately, he just wasn't getting the message. Even the words, "get the fuck out of my face," hadn't fazed him.
Jackson was now itching to get out of the dingy, stuffy pub. She was tired, hungry, and feeling homicidal. But she was pretty sure that Joe, the landlord of the pub, wouldn't be too impressed if his barmaid up and left. Jackson cast a quick glance at her quickly aging, flabby boss, only to find him smiling at her in mock sympathy. After serving another bloke, this one was smiling shyly at her and blushing like a virgin on a first date, Jackson switched her attention back to the pen and clipboard in front of her, noting what needed stocking up on, and all the while wondering how she managed to attract oddballs and plonkers. Not that there was much chance of her being approached by someone who might spark her interest in here. The pub didn't exactly appeal to the youthful. In fact, looking around at the punters, the place looked like a bloody nursing home. The bald weirdo was now suggesting a fuck festival with him and his five friends, all of whom shared two things in common. One, they were over the age of 50. Two, they had beer guts. She respectfully declined, but his persistence earned him a sod off, you sick perv, from her. Still, he was unfazed. Then he leaned across the bar, and by the look in his eyes, Jackson knew that he was about to touch her. Jackson and touch didn't go well together. "Don't dare," she warned. He ignored that warning and abruptly reached out and squeezed her breast painfully hard. Pure reflex, she gripped the pen tightly and stamped the web-like skin between the thumb and forefinger of his roaming hand. Not enough to draw blood, but enough to wrench a cry of pain from him.
"Hurts like fuck, doesn't it?" she said through gritted teeth. "Don't ever touch me again."
The creepy old sod actually grinned at her. Apparently, pain made him horny. Oh, great. Now, in his drunken mind, she had just flirted back. No doubt he would have stayed exactly where he was, hoping for more, if his friend hadn't dragged him away. Joe joined Jackson's side, chuckling.
"Another satisfied customer."
"He's one sick bastard."
"Sick bastards love you and your mean-ass streak."
"It's not mean to be honest and straight with people, or insist on them not being perverted." He nodded toward a particular table not far from the bar where a pair of bashful-looking blokes sat, dressed in leather.
"The two submissives are here again. They still want you to be their dom?"
Joe chuckled again. "You enjoy all this far too much."
"This place used to be boring till you started working here. It might help if you didn't look even spicier when you're fuming. It seems to get their blood running."
"You say all the right things," Jackson said sarcastically.
"Oi, if I gave you a compliment or any sweet words, you'd laugh in my face, just like you do with all the others."
He was right there, which she supposed was why she had never been with a truly decent bloke. Somehow she always ended up with controlling, clingy weirdos. It seemed like nice blokes were often too intimidated by her take-no-prisoners mentality to even approach her. At the same time as the door flew open, a gruff voice rang out,
"Jackson!"
Sigh. She had actually expected her twat of a neighbor earlier. He must have taken longer at his drug dealer's flat than she'd anticipated.
"Yes, Sean. What can I get you? Budweiser? Guinness? Cyanide?"
"Where is she?"
he demanded as he stood opposite Jackson, panting like a bull mastiff.
"She?"
inquired Joe. Sean looked at him, wearing a bitter smile.
"Imagine my surprise when I get back to my flat and find no Celia and no kid. Gone. Clothes and all."
"Good," said Jackson. "All's going to plan, then."
"You helped his woman run off?"
asked Joe, not all that surprised or bothered. Jackson held up her hand.
"Correction. I helped a beaten, mistreated, petrified woman and a bruised, starving, frightened little girl have a new start somewhere away from this threat to their lives and sanity."
"You interfering bitch,"
growled Sean.
"What can I say? It's a gift."
"You put ideas in her head. Celia wouldn't have left me like that."
"No, she wouldn't have," agreed Jackson. "She was too scared to take a piss without your say-so."
"Where did you get the idea that you had the right to stick your nose in?"
I'm sure Jesus said something about loving thy neighbors. He spread his hands over the bar, his face contorting as his anger intensified.
Where's Celia?
Jackson then noticed the tear in the arm of his jacket. She smirked. So you tried to break into my flat and ended up being used as a chew toy.
That dog is an hellhound.
A much-loved hellhound. And I'd better not get back to find your blood all over the carpet of my flat. She had found the beautiful Great Dane, Bronte, about a month or so ago, lying in an alleyway covered in bites and scratches. Without hesitation, she took him back to her flat and got to work on his injuries. From that point on, Bronte had seemed to decide she was his and had remained with her even once he was fully healed. Since then, her flat hadn't been broken into even once. The first time her flat, which was more or less one single room, had been visited, she had been both shocked and enraged. But soon she got used to these regular visits from who appeared to be mostly drug addicts looking for money. Occasionally, they took some of her underwear, too. It was difficult to experience any anxiety over it anymore. How could she feel territorial about a place that was not home, but merely shelter? Besides, Jackson didn't have much by way of possessions that she could call her own, especially not anything of worth. She would never forget the day, about 3 months back, when she found that not only had her flat been broken into, but the culprit was still inside. Not an addict looking for something they could sell, but a 12-year-old boy looking for food. Little David revealed that although he lived with his mom in the flat above Jackson's, the woman was hardly ever home. When she was, she barely took any notice of him. Despite his insistence that he remain with his mom, who he was very protective of, Jackson might have contacted the authorities if she hadn't known from personal experience that going into care didn't mean you would be any better off. So she had taken him to meet a friend of hers who worked in the bakery at the corner of their street. Nora had told him that if he came each day just before closing time, she would give him any pastries or other foods that were left over. Thank God. Jackson made a mental note to check on him later.
Where are they?
Sean's growl snatched Jackson from her thoughts. She groaned.
Are you still here?
I won't ask you again.
I'm curious, Sean. Do you even know how old your little girl is? What date her birthday is? What her favorite food was to eat? When you bothered feeding her, of course?
If the man had truly known anything about Celia and their daughter, then he would have known about Celia's sister, who lived a few towns away. And if he had then suspected that that was where they were, he would have been right. Sean leaned across the bar, his face becoming an ugly shade of purple, his bloodshot eyes bulging.
You've always looked down your nose at me.
Now really, Sean, you make it impossible not to. You're an abusive, twisted, weak little twat who enjoys trying to assault young girls in his free time.
His smirk was crooked and callous.
You'd know all about that, wouldn't you?
So close, he'd come so close to having that delicious body once. Even though it had been 8 years ago, Sean could still remember how arousing she'd looked in her school uniform that day. And just how much more arousing she'd looked when he and his friends were tearing it off her. So close.
I told Nick you wouldn't just lie there, shaking with fear, and not fight back. Mackenzie had taught you better than that, before he went off and became famous as a Formula One driver, that is. If Nick had listened to me and tied you up like I told him to, I reckon that afternoon in the alley would have turned out very differently.
Such a shame. She didn't let it show that the memories were grating on her control, or that the mention of Connor, however fleeting, had brassed her off.
You think what we had in mind for you that day was bad? You think that what I did to Celia and the kid was bad? It will be nothing compared to what I do to you if you don't cough up what I want to know. Oh yeah, I'd have a lot of fun with you. Even more fun than what I had with that little daughter of mine.
Sick, perverted, evil bastard. Anger made her quick. Without thought, she grabbed a fistful of his greasy dark hair and slammed his face down hard on the bar. Once, twice, three times. You ever even attempt to touch me with these paedophilic hands of yours, and not only will I castrate you, but I'll ram your balls up your ass when I'm done. She released his hair with a shove. Although Sean, steaming with infuriation, quietly made his way to the door with that stealthy walk he had, she wasn't mistakenly under the impression that that was the end of the matter. She was right.
Don't be surprised if Don decides he wants his rent money early,
he yelled as he reached the door. Ah, yes, she had the company of her Wookiee look-alike landlord and his grubby paws to look forward to later, when he came asking where his rent money was. It wouldn't take much convincing from Sean to make Don be awkward. It was even possible that Wookiee Don would repeat his cheeky offer that Jackson could pay her rent with her body. She'd just have to knee the perverted old fart in the balls like she did last time. Sean began,
"And another thing."
"Oh, for the love of God, why don't you just piss off out of here?"
A moment after scowling Sean had left, she heard Joe groan loudly.
"What?"
"There's an old man over there who's been watching the whole thing and rubbing his crotch like crazy at the same time."
Oh, bloody wonderful. Another sick perv. Richie eyed the masturbating old-age pensioner with the same disgust as the young barmaid and the landlord. Not that Richie blamed him for being affected so strongly by the barmaid he had heard being called Jackson. God no. This girl was a walking wet dream. He was willing to bet that she could even make a gay dick rise to attention. She was unique, fresh, and exactly what he had been scouting for. The tabloids would love her. He could have her on billboards all across the country. Christ, it was difficult not to be mesmerized by her. She didn't even seem to realize how she naturally commanded the attention of those around her. He doubted she was aware of just how sensual her every move was, either. The fluid, graceful way in which she conducted herself was almost feline. The inner strength she had was so apparent that it was like she wore it. Yet there was no conceitedness about her. She wasn't gazing around to see who might be looking at her, and she wasn't dressed to impress. She just was. And that was enough for any man to want her. There was also her beauty. Now, beauty wasn't the right word. Beauty seemed to imply a certain degree of innocence. This young woman's appearance was not in the least bit angelic. That face, that body, that sultry voice, it was a package meant to tempt a man to sin. When looking at those long, wild, chocolate-brown ringlets, a man would only think of fisting his hands in them while covering her mouth with his own. When gazing at those large, wild brown eyes framed by a thick set of eyelashes, a man would want nothing more than to see them glazed over and dreamy after an orgasm. And those lips. Christ, it was as if they had been purposely designed to service a man's dick. The smooth olive skin would beckon even a priest. What's more, she wasn't wafer-thin like most of the girls he worked with. No, this girl had curves in all the right places. Very nice set of breasts. When her emotions were running high, it was impossible to look away from her. Anger was a good look for her, making her unique eyes feral and become somehow hypnotic. There were no real words to explain it. Whatever it was, it made his dick twitch. Just like everything else about her. Sinful. That was what she was. Just what he needed. Jackson had long ago noticed the long-legged, sandy-haired bloke who was sat in the far corner, alone. She had also noticed that his eyes seemed to follow her every movement. She was used to being stared at in this place, though she could never, for the life of her, fathom what it was that people thought was worth staring at. She blamed the big breasts, and the fact that she was usually the youngest female in here. However, this bloke looked at her differently. Like he was studying her. Like she was some kind of weird artifact that needed to be carefully appraised. She didn't like that. Although he was dressed as casually as all the other punters, there was something about him that suggested he somehow didn't belong. When his eyes met hers, Jackson raised a brow questioningly. Her philosophy had always been, if you have something to say, say it. In response, he mimicked her movement. His expression seemed to be daring her to approach him and act on her agitation. She merely snorted. He was very much mistaken if he thought that a little staring would unnerve her. When you worked in a dodgy place like this, you had to learn to get used to it pretty quickly. Maybe he would have had a chance at unnerving her if he was dressed in leather like the submissives. Why were they even still here? Throughout her entire shift, his gaze remained settled on her. Though it hadn't made her nervous, it had made her downright irritated. Still, she had ignored the out-of-place ogler. No, not ogler. His gaze was studious. When he was the last punter to leave, Jackson had expected him to approach her. But he didn't. He went to Joe. For a moment, Jackson wondered if she had gotten it wrong, if it had been Joe that he was concentrated on all along. Quickly, she discarded that notion. No, she had felt his gaze.
"Jackson,"
called Joe. He didn't speak again until she reached his side.
"This punter here would like to speak to you."
"Yeah, sir." It wasn't exactly unusual for one of the oddballs drinking here to want to have a chat with her, something they considered preliminary to the sex they also had planned. It came with the barmaid territory. It was a wonder she hadn't succumbed to the urge to murder any of them.
"So he's paying me $100 to accommodate a 10-minute talk with you, and I'm really fond of money, so..."
"$100? To talk?"
"Just a verbal exchange, nothing more,"
assured the stranger in a shockingly well-spoken voice. But his words weren't comforting at all. What kind of person paid that kind of money for someone to talk to them? Why hadn't the oddball just approached her himself? Before Jackson could speak again, Joe added,
"And seeing as your shift hasn't technically finished yet, you can consider this a task from your employer."
She scowled at Joe, but he simply smiled and left them to have their private, verbal exchange. The posh stranger instantly spoke. His voice was reassuring.
"I realize that this might be quite an unorthodox way to arrange a conversation with someone."
"Oh, really? You think so?" He smiled.
"I have the distinct feeling, after watching you closely tonight, that any attempt I made to engage in conversation with you wouldn't get me very far."
She nodded, conceding that.
"Plus, I wanted us to be able to speak privately, and I understood that it would need to be a place where you felt safe. I somehow couldn't envision you inviting me to your home, especially at midnight."
"You going to tell me who you are and what you want?" He handed her a business card, which she read aloud. "Richie Moore, Moore's Modeling Agency. Partner." Jackson scrutinized him through narrowed, keen eyes. Maybe she could believe that an oddball recruiter might decide to approach her, thinking that they might get a shag in exchange for offering her a non-existent modeling job. But a partner of a modeling agency?
"You were wondering why the top of the food chain would bother personally with the hunt,"
he guessed.
"Please allow me to explain."
He perched himself on the stool beside her.
"A close friend of mine runs a very successful cosmetics company, and he and I have come together on a project. A joint venture, you might say. A new range of cosmetics was designed between the two of us. A line that is dramatic and echoes a bold yet carefree mindset. A collection that will cater for both the everyday look and the socializing evening. Now we are searching for the face that will set it off. When you open magazines, you have your sweet, open, angelic faces that look ridiculously happy, and you have those who have mastered the sexy, seductive, erotic look. In both mine and my partner's opinion, neither are particularly representative of true life. After all, if all people were truly so happy or so sexy, there would be no need for cosmetics or other such things."
She guessed that much was true, but she didn't comment.
"Neither look echoes the bold product line. What he and I have been looking for is someone real, someone truly representative of life as it really is. And unfortunately, life has its fair share of pain, suffering, and tests.
It had therefore been Richie's idea to look in areas like this where poverty and crime was prominent, where silver spoon lifestyles were alien. Thank God he had.
I believe that you, Jackson, know a depth of pain that some may never experience. I have sat and observed tonight, as many others who know pain would drawn to you, as if they look at you and see another wounded soul, and your strength is like a homing beacon to them.
Homing beacon? This all sounded like psychological bollocks to her. Jackson gave him a skeptical look, but he ignored it.
That kind of strength can only come from being accepting of what you have endured and who you truly are. Unlike that you refuse to act as society expects you to act. You're not civil if you do not believe the person you are speaking to deserves it. You're not patient if you do not believe the person trying your patience is worthy of it. You're true to yourself. You're real. And that is what we need. Someone who is bold and dramatic, just like the range itself.
Richie gave her a moment to digest all that he had said. Anyone else may have become defensive during someone's analysis of them, or argue with the conclusions of that analysis. But no, this young woman was totally accepting of who she was, and cared not what others thought. He deeply admired and respected her for it.
As you are undoubtedly aware, he continued, in my line of business, beauty is a large part of a model's success. You have a natural and uniquely strong glamour. Your desirability is not something that needs to be enhanced. Your appearance is just as compelling as your character.
He smiled widely.
What will be the key to your success, young Jackson, is that pair of eyes you have. They take on a certain intensity when you are, shall we say, frustrated. They literally smolder. It is most entrancing. I've honestly never seen anything like it. I'm sure we can somehow manage to frustrate you a little during the photo shoot.
The latter sentence distracted Jackson from contemplating whether he was a little nuts and had missed his medication.
Photo shoot?
Yes, I'd like you to come and meet my business partner, have some test shots, and then together we can go from there if this is something that we would all be happy with.
Jackson might have sent him on his way with a snort and an insult if it wasn't for the fact that her instincts seemed to like him. She trapped his gaze with hers.
You're really who you say you are?
Richie wondered if she had any idea just how enthralling her gaze could be, like she was literally yanking the truth from his soul.
Indeed I am.
This isn't some kind of scam?
No, it is not.
You are honestly considering me as the face of your new cosmetics range.
She didn't hide how idiotic she found that idea.
Yes, I am.
You're not a fruitcake?
Richie laughed.
I understand this may seem a little surreal. I don't suppose opportunities like this just crop up all the time.
He had that right. It was certainly not every day that someone like her was approached by a modeling agency and then be told that she was super because she was sort of damaged and rude. It would have made sense for her to be experiencing some kind of shock at this moment. However, Jackson had long ago concluded that life had so many twists and turns that trying to anticipate anything in life would be downright stupid. Expect the unexpected. Wasn't that what they said? She still lived according to the theory that it was best to always roll with the punches. And as punches went, this risk wasn't even a slap. It wasn't as if she had anything to lose. And yet, for her to reach for this opportunity would make her feel somewhat of a fraud. Sure, she knew suffering and pain, but so did a gazillion other people. It made her nothing special.
Listen, if what you're looking for is someone who's experienced real pain, then you should go further down the poverty drainpipe. Plenty of people have been through worse than I have.
True, but the depth of your pain is not the main factor here.
And I don't really get this entrancing, compelling crap that you're saying about me.
Richie's lips curved into a smile. He liked that she wasn't vain.
That is merely a matter of self-confidence. We can work on that.
The trouble is, you're not really considering what you've been letting yourself in for. Something tells me I'm not the kind of person you're used to having around.
How so?
She crossed her arms over her chest. I'm not friendly or polite.
Most pleasantries, pleases and thank yous are insincere, I find.
I don't smile much.
Your intensity is what I like.
I don't pose, and I don't know how to strut, nor what I want to learn.
Has nobody ever told you that there is an effortless sensuality to your movements? God, this bloke was persistent.
I don't work well by myself or as part of a group.
Then you'll be dearly frustrated, which will very conveniently bring that incredible spark in your eyes for the photos.
I wouldn't think twice about hurting someone who tried to touch me if I felt I needed to.
I shouldn't worry about that. You're scary enough to make people hesitate to touch you anyway.
I curse like a sailor.
We can always say you have Tourette syndrome.
Even someone with Tourette syndrome would be wide-eyed by some of the things that come out of my mouth. He shrugged.
That is simply because you are an expressive person. There is nothing at all wrong with that. It is part of what makes you so intense and puts that look in your eyes.
So, basically, what you're saying is that you want me as the face for this range of yours because I'm a bitch who doesn't care that she's one? He grinned at her opinion of herself.
Even bitches can get a break in life.
Chapter 2. A week later, Jackson found herself standing outside Westwood Studios, shaking her head and wondering what the bloody hell she was doing there. Her, a model? Compelling character? Entrancing eyes? What a load of old shit. Richie had to be some sort of fruitcake if he really believed all that. She was just a person, the same as everybody else. She didn't see anything special when she looked in the mirror. For the life of her, she couldn't figure out how being a bitch would land her a job, particularly a modeling job. Even if Jackson had thought big in terms of her future, modeling would never have held any appeal for her. Nor would fame. Fortune might be nice, or at least enough for her to move out of that shithole that Don had the nerve to call a flat and to escape the crap situation that she was currently in. But modeling... she couldn't see how she could pull it off. So then why was she standing there? Two simple reasons. Firstly, curiosity. Wouldn't it be nice to just go in there and have a peek into that world? Secondly, she had never been one to miss out on an opportunity, even if the outcome wasn't likely to be in her favor. Jackson was pretty certain that when she got in there and dazzled Richie's friend with her lack of charm, she would be thrown out without so much as a pat on the head. But the fact was that she needed to get out of that mangy flat, so why not go for it? Had Leah ever been to a studio like this? No, she wouldn't think about Leah. Just like Leah didn't think about her, she couldn't possibly think about her, considering that Jackson hadn't seen or heard from her since that day Leah left her at the foster home alone. Shrug. Sometimes people who you loved just didn't love you back, even if they were supposed to. Thinking about it or dwelling over it only wasted minutes out of your life. What was the sense in doing that? With a clear mind and a loud sigh, Jackson allowed her curious side free rein and was soon in a stylish, bright reception area facing an extremely pretty redhead. Jackson would have shot her a brief smile if she wasn't staring at her as though she had walked in with dog shit on her shoes. It seemed that the redhead didn't approve of Jackson's casual look, a simple black t-shirt and dark blue jeans. It was a proper Ugly Betty scenario.
"Whoa, tone down your cheeriness," said Jackson with heavy sarcasm. The redhead forced a smile, though it seemed to kill her.
"Good morning, and welcome to—"
"Yeah, thanks, I'm supposed to be meeting Richie Moore at 9." That was 10 minutes from now. With a twist of her over-glossed lips, the redhead consulted the fancy computer, which Jackson knew cost more than triple her own yearly expenditure, including food, rent, and clothing.
"Mr. Moore and Mr. Miller," muttered the redhead to the computer. Jackson thought she sounded a mixture of impressed and bitter. Mr. Miller had to be the friend Richie talked about. Hang on a sec. Miller? Miller as in Ollie Miller, the makeup artist on all the commercials for Storm Cosmetics? Bloody hell. Jackson wasn't big on makeup and only really bothered with mascara, but even she knew who he was. Not that she'd ever been able to afford any storm stuff, so she couldn't say whether they were any good or not. But God, they were international best-selling products. Well, this might turn out to be an interesting morning.
Jackson Carter, I presume? Said the redhead. If you take a seat, someone will be down shortly to escort you to see Mr. Moore and Mr. Miller.
Jackson nodded and slouched into one of the seats. She noticed that apparently her attire wasn't appreciated by the girls seated around her, particularly the one beside her who was wearing something that may as well have been a flannel. They all looked at Jackson as though she was a failed science experiment or something, though they were quick to look away if Jackson even half scowled at them. Inside, she was smiling. If her casual appearance made them feel uncomfortable, they had to lead very sad lives. It was something like 5 minutes later when she heard her name being called by a familiar voice. Lifting her head, she saw Richie heading towards her, grinning. She could only guess from the whispers and looks of shock on the other girls' faces that it wasn't commonplace for him to come and personally greet whoever he had an appointment with. There was an incredible amount of awe and devotion on the face of the girl seated beside her, but Richie didn't spare her a glance, just as he hadn't the others. Jackson murmured to her, "You should have worn your jeans." Then she rose from her seat and made her way to Richie.
"Hi." "Very nice to see you again, Jackson."
When she simply nodded rather than return the sentiment, his grin widened.
"I like that you don't tell people what you think they want to hear. It's very refreshing. Now, let me introduce you to my business partner, Oliver Miller."
After a short elevator ride and a series of lefts and rights, they finally reached a very contemporary office. Ollie looked up from the computer as they entered. Up close, he resembled Bob Hoskins. Used to Richie's gentle, eloquent voice, it was slightly surprising to hear Ollie's rough and deep Cockney accent.
"All right, love. It must be Jackson."
Unlike Richie, who was all suited up, Ollie was dressed in a pair of jeans and a sweater. Oh yes, she and him would get along just fine.
"Yep."
"Odd name," he mused. "But I like it. Unique, memorable. If someone was to refer to Jackson the model, there wouldn't be much mistaking who they were talking about."
Richie and Jackson both took a seat opposite Ollie as he leaned forward in his chair, fiddling with his pen. A lot of girls had walked through that door, but none had done so without looking like a bag of nerves. The one in front of him was cool as a cucumber, someone who believed they had nothing to lose. For her not to be twitchy and jittery at the thought of what she could gain, she had obviously entered that door believing the answer would be a resounding no.
"So," he finally said, "you want to be a model?"
"No," she replied honestly. "What I want is a better job and a better life than what I've already got, so I can get out of where I'm living before I end up bashing my landlord's head against the toilet that he denies needs fixing. Richie just happens to have come along at the right time. I'm not one to look a gift horse in the mouth, even if I'm not all that keen on the horse."
Ollie smiled approvingly at her before looking at Richie.
"You're right. She's very different."
"I'll give you the same warning I gave Richie Rich," said Jackson. "I'm not easy to have around. You'll never find me full of the joys of spring, and I don't mince my words."
Ollie's smile widened.
"Then I think you'll find that you and I have a lot in common. How old are you?"
22.
"Older than I usually like, but not too old, especially since you look around 18 anyway, and our range is aimed at young women. Ever done any modelling work before?"
Jackson shook her head. "In fact, I don't really like cameras much."
He laughed silently as he made his way around the table to stand in front of her. Just as he raised his hand to touch her face, Jackson reflexively raised her own to block his move.
"Jackson has a slight aversion to touch, especially when it comes to strangers,"
Richie quickly explained. Ollie supposed, by the kind of background she had, that she hadn't known much gentleness in her life, that perhaps she had even encountered much roughness. It would make any touch seem too intimate. Dropping his hand, he said,
"Could you please slowly move your head from side to side for me? That's it. Like that."
Studying her face very closely, he was pleased to see that it was almost completely symmetrical. Not too long, not too round. Full, sensual lips. well-proportioned nose, perfect lashes and brows, no blemishes, moles, or spots. Her skin was practically flawless, and her bone structure made her a photographer's dream. It was a wonder no one had snapped her up before now.
Lovely. Now, what we'd like is to take you down to one of the studios for a few test shots. As Richie explained to you, he and I have joined together on a project, and we are bringing out a whole new range of cosmetics. We intend to call the range Allure. If today goes well, it may be that your face will be what sells those products.
Jackson couldn't imagine her face inspiring anyone to buy anything, but she'd let these poor sods figure that out for themselves after the test shots.
So, let's get you down to makeup, and then after that, you'll be brought to one of the studios where we'll be waiting.
It sounded so much like an order that she could only reply, "Copy that." After an hour of being handled by makeup artists, hairstylists, and wardrobe assistants, Jackson was ushered over to a mirror. She had expected to look extremely different, to not look at all like herself, but that wasn't the effect at all. She was still in jeans and a t-shirt, although both were skin-tight, and the t-shirt showed off her cleavage. Her curls had been smoothed with some kind of serum that didn't take the wildness away but hid the split ends and made it look as though it had been polished. Her face had been treated with a minimum amount of makeup, apart from her eyes, which had been mascaraed to death, and her lips, which had been heavily coated with a rich cherry gloss. The studio she was then escorted to was nothing like what she had pictured. It was massive and almost perfectly square. Everything in it was either black or white. The walls, floor, seats, and even the small, simple kitchenette were white. The ceiling, cameras, lighting equipment, laptop shelves, and the mirror frames were all black. Weird, but not in a bad way. Standing near the kitchenette was Richie, Ollie, a tall, shaggy-haired bloke, and an equally shaggy-haired teenager. All turned and appraised her from head to toe, and then toe to head. "What?" she snapped, uncomfortable under their scrutiny.
"Perfect," said Ollie. "It's you, but with everything enhanced."
Seeing the surprise on her face, he added,
"I don't want to turn you into someone else, Jackson. I want your identity just as much as I want your appearance to represent the new range. Now, meet Tony. You've probably worked out that he's a photographer, going by the fact that he's holding a camera. He also has massive shares in Storm Cosmetics. The young lad behind him is his son, Ant. He's also his apprentice."
"Very intense," commented Tony as he once again appraised her. She was getting a little sick of being called that.
"Can we get this over with? I've been pampered and groomed like a bloody poodle, so I'm not in the best of moods."
Richie smiled in amusement.
"If you're already frustrated, this should make things go quite quickly and smoothly."
As directed by Tony, the pushy photographer, whom she was pretty certain had been instructed to purposely irritate her, Jackson stood on a small platform with her back straight, one shoulder slightly down, neck arched, head tilted to one side, lips parted, and staring into the camera. He was talking at her, not to her, and it was cheesing her off. His barking earned him a lot of expletives from her, which seemed to amuse them all to no end.
"Well, as I live and breathe,"
drawled Tony as the three blokes and the teenager examined the test shots.
"Would you look at those eyes? The heat in them. It's like the look of primal lust you see shooting out the eyes of a jungle cat or something."
Richie pointed at him, smiling.
"Exactly. I couldn't think of any words to describe it." "I've truly never seen anything like it."
Ollie was shaking his head in disbelief.
"The look shoots through you like a spear, doesn't it?"
Tony nodded.
"What's amazing is that it's all eyes. Her face is completely expressionless. She's not scowling or snarling or frowning. It's all coming from the eyes."
Jackson was getting rather sick of being spoken about like she wasn't there. "Well," she demanded, hands on hips, "can I get down from this sodding platform now or what?"
"Congratulations,"
said Ollie in a smooth voice as he shot her a wide, excited smile.
"You are now the face of Allure Cosmetics."
2 months later. At 40 years of age, and after 24 years in the cosmetics industry, Ollie was no stranger to campaign launches, but this was like no other. Oh, everything was normal in terms of schedule. There had been no delays, and the reporters were waiting patiently in the elegantly prepared convention room of the 5-star-plus hotel for the speakers to introduce the face of Allure. Everything was normal in terms of the preparations. The presentation platform was all set up. The impeccably packaged Allure products were on display in a neat yet arty arrangement. Everyone was where they were supposed to be, and everything was ready for the launch party that was due to start shortly in the ballroom of the hotel. But what he saw when he walked into the upstairs suite where Jackson was being groomed, as she called it, knocked him for six. Usually, he would have to make an entrance with a booming voice to attract the attention of all the people nervously fussing and busybodying around while obsessing over every little detail of the model. Hair, makeup, clothes, posture. But in this suite was total silence. Not only that, but there weren't makeup products lying here, there, and everywhere. Not one soul in the room was standing. His instinct was to seize up. Something had to have gone wrong. But it wasn't a mortified or nervous silence. His eyes were quickly drawn to the stunning young woman perched on the arm of a bulky chair. She was dressed in the stylishly casual D&G outfit that was designed especially and exclusively for her, a pair of sea-blue, skin-tight jeans that were a kind of velvety denim, and a light lemon V-neck top that casually drooped at one shoulder. They hadn't wanted her in an extravagant dress, as that just didn't suit her character, which was just as well because she was refusing to look like an ornament anyway. As casual as her outfit was designed to be, it was still chic and cutting-edge, and it highlighted each of her sinful curves. That, along with the subtle yet eye-catching use of Allure products on her face, had Jackson looking as glamorous as all hell. "You all right?" Jackson asked Ollie, who looked a little odd at the moment.
"Just wondering why there's a deathly silence in here."
"I haven't threatened them with the loss of important body parts, if that's what you're wondering. They're fine. Watch."
Then she smiled as she sang the nursery rhyme, "If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands." Then there was laughter and clapping. Ollie could only shake his head and chuckle.
"She told us to put everything away," said Louisa as she gazed at Jackson fondly.
Ollie found that he hadn't been able to look at Louisa very long without laughing since Jackson had pointed out that she had a Morticia Adams vibe about her. Jackson hadn't been poking fun or making an insult, it was purely an observation. Louisa even agreed with her. Ollie did love her bluntness.
"Yes, because there was a bloody self-correction epidemic going on," said Jackson. "They were all done with the grooming ages ago, but kept coming back fixing what didn't need to be fixed and seeing mistakes that weren't even there. Then Louisa nearly had a panic attack when she discovered that I hadn't been exaggerating when I said that no matter what brush or gel or spray she used, these curls of mine always did their own thing."
"That's what I like about them. They're wild, like you and those eyes of yours."
Just then, Richie appeared behind Ollie and tensed.
"Is something wrong?"
"Jackson insisted we pack up our stuff and just sit and relax," said Kieran, the chief makeup artist. "We've been talking about that new soap on telly about scousers. Did you watch the first episode last week?"
Richie stared at the young woman in awe for mastering the art of calming the team. She won people over so effortlessly, even the rather antisocial wardrobe assistant.
"Who sent the flowers?"
"Oh, they're from Tony and his wife," she said.
On the day that Ollie and Richie had chosen her as the face of Allure, Tony had insisted on giving her a lift home after the photo shoot. Then he had seen the block of flats she lived in and turned right back around, refusing to let her go back there. After much disputing, Tony apologized for his daddy approach and, in a much gentler tone, offered for her to rent, because she refused to stay there for free, the annex of his house. Only when he agreed that she could bring Bronte was the deal sealed. Both he and his wife were trying to discourage her from getting an apartment and to stay in their annex, but Jackson had been looking forward to having something that was hers. Plus, as much as she adored Lily and Tony,
They tried to baby her through the process of going from one lifestyle to another. The gentle approach wasn't Jackson's way. She wanted to face all the sudden changes head-on and find her own 2 feet.
"Now remember, Jackson," said Ollie in a serious tone, "because your name